So alphabetically, anybody want to take a guess? A guess on this? Oh, would you? Go with the first name. You can take that. Okay. Anybody? We do have swag. Sorry, the.
Oh,
do it by name. Do it by name. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Wayne then Victor. Okay. So you think it's going to be Mark being which one? Okay, so you think he's a pie. How do you feel about that, Mark?
Your surname or first name?
Oh, we'll go for the first name. First name. So to make it easier, I'm Wayne, Pat, Mark, Neil, Victor. Okay, so based on first name, you're not right. Anybody else want to have a stab at this? Yep. It's an IKEA cabinet. So we got Victor. Well done. Okay.
That was good.
That was well done. So what we've got is we have got some swag to give away. Have you got a ticket to the... You take one of those. Well done. Okay. So, there you go. So what we've basically got is we've got Mark Rhodes being the photographer. You want to explain why that is, Mark?
I take pictures.
About that restraining order as well, okay. Neil Hodgson, why is that the whiskey glass?
I know Spence Harbour far too well.
Spence Harbour will drive anyone to drink, okay. That goes without saying. Okay, and then we've got Pat Martin.
So I have a small farm and I have some sheep, and I just did a session with Wayne and he put a picture up of the sheep and a picture up of some handcuffs. I'm not going to associate those two things.
But who was he handcuffing? In fact, we don't want to know that, okay. Myself, the pie. Pat kind of accuses me of eating all the pies. I put on a bit of weight recently. I used to be a little
bit
thinner.
Evidence-based.
Evidence-based. So I ate all the pies, but like SharePoint Farms and taking over SQL along those lines, so yep. And the last one is Victor.
Yeah, IKEA from Sweden. I guess you guessed that already.
Okay, so basically our agenda today, I mean, we basically had the opportunity that another session came up and it's kind of thinking around, what can we do to make this a little bit of fun, okay? So this session came up and I thought, well, we've got some, you know, great international speakers across, you know, coming across the world from here, so apart from Pat and myself, who are based here in Auckland, or sometimes anyway. So what we thought we'd do is just basically have an open panel discussion for any questions that you want to ask anything about, and I had to clarify this, around SharePoint. So we're happy to ask or attempt to answer any of the questions. We have got swag to give away. So the condition of this is that if we can't answer your question, then we get to, you get the prize if you can't answer one of our questions. If they can answer one of our questions, then you get to take some swag away on that. So hopefully you guys can't read the fine print, but there is always a little bit of fine print associated with this. Okay, so you get a copy of these slides, you can have a look at that and have a bit of a laugh. So this is meant to be a very light-hearted, have a bit of fun. I do appreciate that we're right before the Tech Fest, okay? So with that, open questions. Go for it.
So the thing that this is basically my pet peeve, but what it comes down to is we're all into building high availability farms. The business wants 24/7, whether we can give it to them is another question. But basically, I mean, there's SharePoint Online, and obviously Microsoft does upgrades to the SharePoint farm. I want to know how, like, there seems to be the idea that you have two farms, you upgrade one, you move everybody over onto that, and then you continue on with the other one. But, and I know you automate it probably using PowerShell and things like this, but, like, how do you, like, what do you use to bring it all together? How do you organize all your PowerShell scripts, and how do you organize all those processes to be able to do that repeatedly, fluently, without any downtime?
So the concept of no downtime is really, you know, there is no concept of no downtime. Obviously, read-only, as you mentioned, is the scenario where we switch your farm to read-only, and then we can take the content, upgrade it in the background. How do we make that slick and quick? We do have something we call the repeatable upgrade framework, which is a very highly developed process. You said PowerShell scripts and processes. It's designed around all the things you said, you know, bringing the content DBs together, upgrading the content DBs. We use the concept of service farms. So when we're upgrading your content, we don't need to upgrade search and everything else that goes with it. You know, forget the idea of version to version upgrades now. We've gone past the point of doing a 14 to 15 upgrade. Okay, and we do a lot of other things as well behind the scenes that you wouldn't necessarily want to do in a an on-premises farm, you know. And I can't discuss those. Yeah. And I, to be honest, I don't know all the details anyway. But from a content perspective, keeping the farm, we swing upgrade when we need to. So we put you in read-only mode, and we just have very well developed, very well tested. As you know, if you went through the process of 14 to 15 upgrades through as an Office 365 tenant, we did have hiccups. You know, there were scenarios where we did have outages. But we've learned from those, and today you should never theoretically see an outage. But you know, in terms of all I can say is develop it, practice it, just keep repeating it.
So Microsoft wouldn't necessarily share those particular learnings?
No, because the things that we do, you find you probably wouldn't support it if you did it. What we do in the service isn't what we would envisage you do on premises.
Okay. Actually, regarding to that, me and Vesa Juvonen are working on a white paper regarding to that. But more focused on operations, not that much upgrade and that stuff, but more on operations, which hopefully will be out on TechNet in the near future or something. But making that available for in a smaller scale, Office 365 is that large and it's very specific to their needs in 365, but to doing it on a smaller scale. So we're working on a white paper with that.
Okay. So just a bit of a side question. Has anybody run Fiddler against Office 365 recently? I know you have because I told you to. Okay, so something you can...
I didn't have to run it.
So what you can do if you're a little bit of a geek, just run Fiddler against Office 365. In fact, Neil's probably going to get a bit upset with me for saying this. And have a look at the HTTP headers. Okay? So those who know SharePoint about what it does with the HTTP headers, there's actually quite an interesting number coming back out of those HTTP headers at the moment. Okay. Anybody else got a question?
Speaking of outages, what is the actual process of getting some money back? I have an outstanding call about 6 months. And how do you prove that you have actually
when we had an outage, and then I'm not with Microsoft as a consultant. We are using 365. We had an outage. We just submitted a service request, and it went through straight away almost. So it was very smooth for us. I don't know if you can answer that more, Neil.
No, I've never personally experienced an outage because my tenants never failed.
So, have you started with the service request?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how to do it in a better way, but yeah.
I can kind of answer a little bit of that.
Oh, you can have it then.
Yeah, okay. So I can't give away too much, but there is changes afoot. Okay, so watch the space. There is something that they are working on, and something will happen. Okay, as to when, can't say.
Yeah, the Yammer integration or lack of, Yammer integration or kind of lack of is very much a V1. You know, it's like, how do we get something out there for people to use? You know, as time goes on, you'll see things different. Yammer's not as big as integration point as Fast was, for example, in Search. It took us 5 years to get where we are today with Search. Mm-hmm. Yammer integration in terms of social hopefully won't take that long. We're a lot more agile than we were from a server platform perspective. But as Wayne says, there are changes.
Sorry. Okay. So this gentleman here was going to ask a question before.
Yes. I know that SharePoint, you're saying, requires a 1 millisecond latency. If you were putting it into the cloud, we just went to a speaking session for performance during SQL Server and Windows Azure virtual machines, mm-hmm. and we had a test of disk writes, and with the shredding, not shredding, what do you call it,
Fragmentation?
No, not fragmentation. The striping. Yes, striping. When you stripe the disk, you can get a 20 millisecond latency for IOs. So how do you achieve your 1 millisecond latency to be able to put SharePoint as SharePoint SQL Server into a virtual machine under Windows Azure to achieve the 1 millisecond latency for SharePoint?
So let me kind of recap that. What we're saying is we have a statement that says we need a 1 millisecond, or we should have sub or 1 millisecond latency between web front end and SQL Server. But you're saying if we can only achieve 20 millisecond response time off the disk, how are we ever going to get 1 millisecond response time? So the millisecond response time with respect to SharePoint is something that I'm quite passionate about and something I'm working on now in terms of providing the guidance for that. And we're really not concerned with how long SQL Server takes to respond to the request, which is where the disk latency comes in. And Pat, jump in if I'm getting this wrong. But our concern from a SharePoint perspective is the is really around the network latency and the round trip time. If you issue a big query to SharePoint and it takes 10 to SQL and it takes 10 seconds to respond, that's irrelevant. That's just the nature of the query. It might be a particularly poorly written CAML query, for example, that's just a hideous SQL statement behind it. It's really about the network latency and just that initial responsiveness. We're measuring latency from a SharePoint usage provider perspective just by doing select one statements against databases. That's doing no query at all, effectively. So it's a very different thing. You know, SharePoint queries can take a long time. Yeah, but you can optimize SQL to improve that, hopefully. But you have to you can't join the two together in terms of the millisecond latency and how long SQL takes to respond. It is a different thing.
So just an example of that. I worked with Toyota out of Japan, and they did one of the first SharePoint 2013 deployments into Azure. And we did every trick we could think of under the sun to try and, you know, reduce some of those latency issues. So we did, you know, the old, you know, 64K unit sizes, split out all the disks as much as we could and optimize as much as we could from that perspective, so it can be done. And there is a large web content management site running out there in Azure at the moment for Toyota. So there is case studies around it.
So you can put it in
the cloud.
SharePoint is 100% supported running an IIS.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Okay, that's actually a good question. What would you like?
The robot?
Well, we'll save that. Whoever asks the very, very best question to get the robot. So in the meantime, would you like something else?
But you're up there.
In the meantime,
would you like
the bag?
Okay, you'll take the money or the bag?
Open the money.
So the other thing we have got is that we have got the SharePoint conference passes, which we've got on those. So or we've got some T-shirts, or we've got whatever's in the bag.
This is probably the most valuable thing out of all the prizes.
Okay.
You could eBay that.
Can I take the poor cousin class and get a SharePoint conference pass? Because my boss won't send me because we're a not-for-profit.
Have you got a good question?
Yeah.
He just asked it.
Maybe. We'll hold that.
You have to come up with a good question. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Test environment. On a simple box, there is SharePoint, important services, analytics services as well. Everything's running on this box.
All right.
Now, everything on SharePoint points into this box in this test environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How's that working for you?
To solve this problem, the DBA ripped out reporting services, literally took out the databases and reporting services.
Mm-hmm.
The performance increased a bit, but not considerably. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, in the test SharePoint environment, none of the reports run. Now, if you go into your reporting services area and say, right, now this isn't 2013, this is 2010.
Yep. Yeah, that's fine. That's SharePoint, yeah.
You're going to, all you're going to do is you're going to account in there, the reports, and this also takes into consideration taking offline every site app and site application.
Okay, so are you running it in native or integrated mode? Ah, you can't answer my question, so nah. Sorry? It's an integrated mode, okay.
Yeah, so I guess there's a number of things around that. The first one is when you say rip it out, you need to kind of remove it gracefully rather than rip it out. And in terms of the accounts that are being used, Reporting Services has a public key pair that it uses. It uses a secure channel between the server and the database. So if you change anything that was used to seed those keys, which includes the name of the machine or the name of the account, you're going to break that algorithm and bad things will happen. So things like storing the originals of your reports in some source control repository somewhere is a really good idea before you start to do that kind of thing. And also typically you wouldn't use Report Manager to manage your reports. If you're running in integrated mode, you're going to use the SharePoint portal to do that. And the last thing is the same comment I made to you before, which is that Reporting Services is two things. It's a server-side component and a database component, and the server-side component should not be on that same box. It should be in your web tier for architectural and performance reasons. Yeah. Right.
The problem is, if you come across this thing, there is nowhere to go. I have no avenue to fix it. They won't put it back in place, so you could actually detach, reattach, move Reporting Services onto a different server. I have no...
So the only supported way to move Reporting Services... I come back to supported, because that's the area I work in. The only supported way to move reports from one server to another is to use the RS scripting host. That's our supported mechanism for moving any Reporting Services artifact, including reports and accounts and security permissions, from one place to another. So one thing is making it work, another thing is doing it in a supported way. And in terms of places to go, you've always got Premier support cases as well if you're in that space. I mean, there's always that avenue. So.
So doing anything in the content DB. In fact, I've got two mics. Okay. So touching anything in the content DB without going through Premier support is completely off limits and unsupported. In fact, touching any of the SharePoint databases apart from logging, the logging databases, is completely unsupported. Okay. Unless Premier support tells you to do it as part of the support case. So in your particular case, what I'd recommend to do if you've got a Premier support agreement is actually raise a Premier support case on that. Or rebuild the server.
So the other thing too, just quickly based on Wayne's comment, is that the content database's copy of the report definitions are a secondary copy of those stored in the report server database, and they're cached and they're time-based. So your original sources are still in your report server database, not in your content database.
Yeah. So what I've actually got for you is, this is a collector's item, okay? It is the SharePoint 2010 pig, okay? Which came from the 2011 SharePoint conference, and when it lands, it does make a noise. Since your farm is broken, unfortunately this pig is also broken as well. The elastic A fortunately broke, but it was meant to be able to slingshot it across. So, but anyway, there you go. There's a good question prize.
Can I give you the SharePoint conference?
Yeah, if you want to.
More? I'd like to do the SharePoint.
Okay. Okay.
That's
fine. There you go, sir.
So in land of operations, I mean SharePoint is a mother of a thing and requires lots of
nurturing and caring like a mother is.
But we've got F5 load balancing, and I got really excited hearing about the request manager. And I was wondering, what is, like, obviously the main pro for us would be, yay, we don't have to deal with the F5 guys, if the request manager can fully take over. But what would be the main contra or the other main pro, apart from getting rid of the F5 guys' involvement in any of that sort of work? What's the main benefit and contra for using the request manager?
Request management doesn't replace... And layer 7 load balancer. You still need load balancer to load balance on the, if you have a separate request management layer, for instance, it needs to get in somewhere, and you don't want one server taking all the requests and routing them, because then you have a single point of failure. So you still need a layer 7 load balancer in front of them. It's more in general in terms of, when I talked in my session, the concept of web front ends are diminishing, but you have web service and application service, and if you use, for instance, health-based routing, they can route, the incoming requests are routed to one of the request management servers, the request management routes it to the most healthy server, or if it's a crawl target, or for instance, if you want all the, OneNote is a very chatty client, for instance, you want all OneNote updates to be on a specific pool of servers, for instance. That's what request management is used for.
You've had too many prizes, even though you've gone with a couple of you're going for the sympathy vote with your leg as well. So, yeah, go for it, Nick.
I've got a question on user profile. You know, when we hit the problems with the CMS.
Oh, God. Is that my phone?
I want to know about this magical thing called the record ID inside the user profile service, and why it is the unique identifier of profiles.
What is the unique identifier?
The record ID. Seems to be that the record ID is that joiner between your profile and your social database. And also that's what's used for things like NewsGator and some other sort of social collaboration stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So problem that we have is when you start on kick off full sync for a new user profile service application,
yep,
that you can't import your social data because those record IDs are now no longer in sync anymore and we can't recover that social information. So first question is, why is it like that? And second question, is there going to be something that can be done to fix that in the future so we can rebuild these profiles more, you know, if we had to?
Neil?
It's a 2010 question for the social data, because the social data database is gone.
Yeah, 2013 has the same problem still from what I've...
I don't think that's been changed.
No.
So.
No, it's the same. It's still a record ID, but it's not tied to the user social data, is it? Since the social data is basically not used anymore for social stuff, it's all in the content DBs.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So it's just 2010. Yeah.
Yeah. So upgrade, is it?
Tomorrow's session. Yeah.
There is kind of one thing you could add to that. I know the scenario with NewsGator and the record ID. NewsGator imports profiles from the SharePoint user profile DB. Yeah. In terms of how you can do anything in terms of syncing user profile data, I'm going to use a horrible word now. Don't hit me. UPRE, right? So you can key, UPRE can key off a parameter or a property of the user profile. It doesn't have to be record ID. So you can sync based on email. You can sync based on login ID. So you can sync between social DB, or not between user profile instances, using a different key than the record ID. Because obviously when you do imports, you're not necessarily going to get the same record ID for the same user each time. So you can do something with UPRE. I wouldn't do it in production until you're doing an awful lot of testing in a test environment, though.
But we love UPRE.
You might.
Do you guys prefer it over the log shipping, because that's now supported?
No, I would log ship every time.
Log ship every time?
Yep.
Yep.
Log shipping is supported for user profile DBs, user profile and social DBs in 2010 and 2013.
But not the sync DB?
Well, you can do something with the sync DB, but it also involves then re-importing the encryption keys, which is a nightmare. So,
yeah.
I would drop the sync. Rebuild your user profile service application using the two DBs that you've log shipped.
Yeah, that's been a recent change, hasn't it?
Yep, last week.
Yeah, there you go.
TechNet said it for a long time, but we didn't support it. TechNet was wrong.
Yep.
We've since gone back and done some additional revalidation, and we now do support it. So the TechNet article is now right.
Yep. So it's changed in March this year.
Yeah.
So it's changed as of last week.
As of last week, we officially support it, even though TechNet was 6 months ahead of us. So there's a guy, I don't know if you know, there's a guy called Ryan Campbell, who's a MCS consultant. He's written a blog article on how to do something similar to what you're saying using the user profile service application.
Sure. Don't need anything, that's fine.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, brilliant. Thank
cool.
you.
You're welcome.
Here's another question.
We're having a question on search service. What we're finding is that the incremental roles that generate
So your node runner process you're referring to is for the content processor, because the crawler runs as MS Search, right?
Yeah, so basically the fast search node runner process, when the incremental call starts, we actually
So I've not seen that specifically. In terms of modifying the configuration of Node Runner, in the fast servers time back in 2010, we had configuration files that you could modify and reload, and that would cap the memory, or you could dynamically change the memory in that regard. That you could potentially still do that in 2013, although right now it's unsupported to do it. Coming back from a can you, should you type scenario. The only thing I could recommend, which you're not going to like, will be a recycle the service. Or if there's a bug out there, I haven't heard of that. I don't know if anyone else has.
It doesn't look like it's a memory leak. If it stays that way, it's just the nature of .NET applications. Mm-hmm. Once they allocate memory, it will not give it back.
Unless it's SQL.
SQL doesn't give it back. No.
So that's just the nature of it. It reaches what it needs, and it doesn't give that back. Yeah. It's allocated that memory.
The downside from a recycle perspective is you can't individually recycle Node Runner processes. Yeah. You have to recycle the search service host. So if you're running additional search services on the same box, like Query, for example, you're going to recycle the whole thing. It'll be quick. It'll come back up relatively quickly as long as you've not got very, very large indexes. But right now, I think that's probably the only thing you could do.
But a question I'd have related to that, although I'm not a SharePoint guy, is once that memory increment has reached a certain point, if you run that same process again, does it reuse that memory that has grown, or will it allocate memory a second time?
Usually what we did, we just recycled
the whole box?
Because
mm-hmm. That would be a good way to test exactly what's...
See if it levels out there and stays.
Yeah.
I've seen they take 4 or 5 gigs. They do. So that's normal.
Yeah.
That's why you need large search service today.
Yeah, one of the other things with the Node Runner is if you've got a lot of cores in the box, you'll also consume memory in proportion to the number of cores. So that's something to watch for with Node Runner. So I've seen Node Runner on fast for 2010 running with like 30 gig RAM easily.
So if we know that, for instance, there's a period during the day that it's safe to restart the service, that's important.
Yes, unless, as Pat says, if you're finding that when you next time you run a crawl, you're just reusing the same memory, it's probably normal, right?
Yeah. And just think of how IIS works with the W3 and WP process. Mm-hmm. It's automatically built in to recycle it every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do that, but with the service, we don't have any mechanism to schedule the recycle.
Mm-hmm.
We create the scheduled task and restart service if we search host controller. If you have a time, you can do that.
You sure you're not writing the beta bits? Because there was an issue like that in beta.
We patched to March.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to drop me a mail, I can do some digging for you and see if it's a known issue.
I'll
give you a card.
Out of curiosity, how much RAM have you got in the particular system?
Probably not much, about 15
gigs. Okay.
And you're running all search components on that box.
Yeah, so basically what we're starting to look into is dedicating a server just to search, but our search, because our content doesn't change that often, it initially made sense to, and it did make sense to have it on that box, but if we will see that it's, so basically we're playing around with the two ideas, either to have a schedule restart the service or to actually dedicate the box.
So when you say it's not dedicated, what other things are running? Are there non-SharePoint things running on that machine?
Sharing resources with the web application as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should definitely look into have a separate search server, content processing, analytics, control.
I've actually seen, I think, what you're talking about on very staffed hosts, and that's only when distributed cache was on as well on that server. Is that on that server as well?
Yeah.
It, between the two of those, you're going to need more memory, I think.
Yeah. Far away. Go for it. No.
Custom BCS connector.
Yeah.
Build something.
That's what we had to do.
Yeah. Okay.
We're creating a SharePoint 2010 stock group concept. environment. And so just regarding crawling, we use Sitecore as our website for one to the C Council. And
sorry, I can't hear you anymore. Sorry.
Not you really want me to answer that?
The short answer is no.
Yeah, no. GSA and SharePoint don't mix well together.
Yeah. No. So you, even though you are doing some horrible stuff. Yeah. I guess just a little bit on that. I mean, Neil can expand on this a little bit more. I mean, basically what happens when SharePoint inserts it itself, it does detect that it is actually SharePoint, and it actually goes and accesses it slightly differently in a more optimal manner. Victor?
Just to consider, like, I'm just trying to put a scenario, like, we have a requirement, like, I need to build a custom solution, which can be done as a sandbox solution, fully trusted solution, or as apps. Now, what will be kind of a strategy? Which option or which strategy will you take to develop the solution?
The answer to that question it depends. Of course, if you have any thought of going to the cloud, app is your only way. Starting with apps, and I would go apps, sandboxed, and fully trusted that way, and start that way, working down to fully trusted. Fully trusted is the worst option, but in many cases, the only option still. But apps have, it's a personal preference right now, since it doesn't support all the things that the server-side API does. So you're pretty limited, but it's a good approach to start with that. Can it be done with an app? Yeah, then you might start with that. Otherwise, sandbox or fully trusted. Does it answer your question or?
Yes,
in a way. Yeah, it's a threshold going over to working with apps compared to fully trusted code. It is, but it's worth starting that journey now, and at least start testing out your solutions if you can build it using apps, so you're prepared for future investment in SharePoint by the product team or in Office 365, etc.
Sorry, quick question. Do you think the server object model is going to go away anytime soon since it's a
classic? Soon, I don't know. Not soon.
It
I don't think
been
so.
It deprecated, yeah. If that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like, if it's classic now, will it be deprecated in the next?
Yeah, well, I mean, the key thing to think about it is that they are, you know, from a strategy perspective, it's the direction's very, very clear. Okay, it's going cloud based. Okay, whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
So the issue there is that server side code is always going to be an issue. So,
take a look at MSD, and they only talk about apps today. So it's very clear where Microsoft wants us to go and how we should develop.
Yeah.
So it's worth looking into.
It's less of a question. It's just to add to that. Like, we're starting to go down the road now of if the business require trusted solution, we try and convince them to change their business process to more go in line with what we can configure with SharePoint, because a trusted solution ends up creating way more operational headaches than
exactly.
It's worth, purely around, like, you know, you're creating outages every time you deploy, and
time to market. If they want something built, if it's a fully trusted code, they have to wait for a service window. If it can be configured using out-of-the-box features or with an app, it can be installed the day after. So it's much cheaper in the long run, running with apps.
Damon.
So two questions. So question number one, point services in 2013, there's a lot of enhancements done around the theming, but they're largely around the outside of the reports which we're doing. A lot of customers want to have the performance point graphs in their kind of brand colors. Is there any way of actually limiting the dynamically generated colors in performance point services so they can be applied to a palette? So that's question number one. I'm just coming up with nasty questions.
Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry. Can't hear you.
Is there any roadmap guidance around
I want the answer on that question myself. I had that from a customer the other day, and I don't think there's any way to change that, unfortunately. Yeah.
So I've been trying to get the roadmap for performance point services for some time now. So if you get it, can you let me know, please?
Yeah. You want a T-shirt, Ben?
And with regards to InfoPath, the guidance there is to look into other options. That's the roadmap. InfoPath. Look at the other options. Look at apps, web forms, or similar.
I'll put a different spin on it. Okay, so InfoPath was not an investment area for 2013.
Yeah. They did invest. They changed the icon in Central Admin.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It was a wee investment area in 2013.
It's disappeared behind my Nintex icon somewhere.
So, I mean, basically what it means is that it was an investment area. Is it going to go away? It can still be appropriate where it's appropriate. However,
I'm in an upgrade project now with a lot of InfoPath forms, and we're migrating or changing all that InfoPath forms into SharePoint apps.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing.
So, yeah.
So with the guidance we should be giving customers now, because it's a really interesting one, because you've got a lot of customers on standard, and they're looking at should I go to the enterprise license, and one of the
barriers is InfoPath. Yep.
Is the InfoPath, and they're actually looking at
apps.
Should I buy enterprise
apps.
And go InfoPath? So you'd be saying
apps. Yep.
Yeah, or Access Services 2013.
Okay.
Yep.
That's a really good thing. They have forms, they have reporting
well,
and everything.
But that's enterprise license
yeah.
as well.
Right, so the customer kind of wants an excuse to go enterprise.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go enterprise.
Access Services.
Always.
But it would be, if you're going to go enterprise, go Access or build apps, don't keep sending
them down. Yeah, I'd be cautious, but that's that's probably me getting a don't come Monday. Yeah, I guess the other issue too is that a lot of people that start off with the InfoPath forms, they sometimes hit some certain points where some of the types of forms they want to create does prove to be a little bit difficult within InfoPath. So an example of that is that they may want to hook into the managed metadata service application. Out of the box, there's no way to do it in 2.10, but now that we've got the REST interface, you can potentially do it. So just a few little things you need to be wary of. That on the surface, InfoPath seems great, but sometimes it's not as great.
It's like a good prototyping tool for the customer, and then you build a web form.
Yep.
The other question around that is, what about InfoPath as part of Office? So actually, the original
Office apps.
Yeah.
That's the answer to that one. So you're thinking about the document information panel,
or? So just actually kind of for Office InfoPath, like the rich client.
I guess so.
Well?
I think so, yeah. But if you want forms in Office, like the document information panel, you should replace that with Office apps instead.
Target. I told you about that camera.
The guy that was the application associated with that logging was looking at last night. I didn't get the answer. You got the answer from Wayne. What was the application that was associated with that logging? Can you remember what it was talking about logging within your deep dive sessions?
Give me the service application that was the prerequisite for.
So the logging database or the state?
You said last night, what it was, you said, there is an application associated with that logging. That's the last thing you said last night. And I didn't get the answer. Mark said, I don't know the answer. And then I didn't get the answer.
Oh, God, I can't remember. I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
No, not you.
Do you mean like a third-party application?
No, the SharePoint.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what?
Yeah, I think I know. I think it was with regard to state, and I think it was. Yeah, I think what it was is that, if you provision the search service application, that will automatically create the state service for you.
Cool.
created a logging service.
And logging,
logging
yeah.
service
yeah.
for you. So, yeah, so basically, yeah, I think I understand the context. Okay, so basically, when you go to provision a farm, there's a couple of little prerequisites that you sometimes want to set up yourself, otherwise SharePoint will automatically provision them, and one of them is the logging. So, for example, if you take a vanilla farm, install search first, lo and behold, you'll find that you've got the logging there.
Oh, no, that was
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay.
I can't.
You'd have to come back.
Sorry about
okay.
that.
Yeah. Ruben.
It's a bit of a dev question. One of the most, the thing that excited me the most when SharePoint, basically 2010, 2015, was that OData client, that you could query OData from JavaScript. And I've noticed that it's still with anonymous, there's lots of issues, but it's basically working pretty smooth when you're authenticated.
Yeah, by default it's anonymously disabled on most of the REST endpoints. There are some XML hacks you can do to get that working.
I've done it, but it didn't seem to. I've done the PowerShell one where you actually turn those flags on.
Yeah.
But it still seemed to.
Which endpoints are you trying to use? Waldeck Mastercards has written a couple of blog posts on that.
Yeah.
And it's basically search. That's I think it's search and some other endpoints you can enable for anonymous authentication, which are useful in publicfacing.com sites, for instance.
So basically, turning these flags on should...
Should, yeah.
Completely
yeah. Solved. We're using it in a couple of .com sites, which are very search heavy. We use a lot of those REST interfaces. Unfortunately, I don't do that kind of customization anymore, but I know about those blog posts and how that we done it. So that should work, at least. Otherwise, check Waldeck's blog and post a comment on his blog and ask him, because he usually answers pretty fast. You created your own proxy, okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Look into his blog post.
No.
This is a bit of an information security management side of things. We've got our guys looking here, wanting to know what sort of lives inside our SharePoint platform. This is all around that sort of PCI compliance and making sure we're keeping our data safe.
Uh-huh.
What's going on here? So,
yep.
Thoughts from you guys? Just so we've got some clear direction to go back and say, yay, nay. Can we also throttle a user at a web application layer as well? Maybe we give them access in via a web app, but with a certain amount of allocation and rate that they can get data back.
So, are they trying to do discovery on the content?
Well, they're not trying to do discovery content. They just want to know what that content looks like, what's the metadata around it. So like things like an internal customer number, if there is a credit card number, a bank account number that might be associated with that, even inside the document, they want to know what data might be inside there as well. So it's really heavy in terms of what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Like full text crawling.
Because it sounds like search is your friend,
yeah.
Right, for that. Search.
Search can get to that information, right?
Search
so
can get to all that information. And in 2013, there's a concept of what we call a client type,
yeah.
Which is you can prioritize different clients. So if you're
yeah.
concerned about the impact of someone doing a lot of heavy queries against your search platform, for example.
Yeah, it's an external application that's coming in. So
right, but the external application, if you're going to use search, is the easiest way to discover all of your content, without question, without unless you...
Yeah. So it sounds like this is a third-party
product coming in. So
okay.
It's talking about somebody else wanting to know what lives inside.
But that third-party product can still if it's a product that can make queries against SharePoint, why can't it make queries using the SharePoint?
How does it query SharePoint?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what we don't know. So,
I wanted
to just give a database access. I'm like,
I wouldn't be doing that. Because you very easily could end up in an unsupported state.
I'd be tempted to go back to them and say if they're willing to write a search interface
for
exposing the content, then their search query that comes in can contain a parameter which is a client type.
Yeah.
The client type, you can control the throttle on the client type.
And by default,
if they refuse to do it, by default, a client type that doesn't identify itself gets throttled anyway.
Yeah.
So they still find the content, but the throttle will basically come in. They'll preference... the search service will preference your own users and the SharePoint services over that incoming request.
Yeah.
So I would go down that route to discover the content.
Mm. I can add on to that bit. I haven't been through PCI, but I went through visa compliance a couple of years ago, and we were able to push back quite a bit on them and say, look, we can't give you access to these systems, this is not supported, but we can assure you that none of the details and what they're after, specifically unencrypted credit cards being stored in the system, as long as we went back and said, there's no chance of that being stored in there, they were good with it, actually.
Mm. But search is your friend. Mm. Yeah. Well, actually do a search for the word confidential. It's amazing what you can find. Particularly if you're indexing the file systems.
In PowerView, is there a way to pass a primitive to a slicer?
In PowerView? I don't know.
So there must be...
Oh, fuel.
Yes, you can. A slicer basically becomes a name frame, so you can
throw it. Okay. Cool. That's a good question. We're starting to run out of swag, so we can have a T-shirt. Okay, you can have a T-shirt. There you go. Oops, sorry. Okay. Well, actually, while I've got the pointer, I'm going to ask you guys a question.
Good.
Is that the question?
That's a question. You didn't read the fine print, did you?
Wow.
No, anybody know the reference to that? I know you do.
42.
No, it's on the Bridge of Doom. Monty Python?
He's got it.
Very good. Okay. So we'll go through another ones. These are some random questions that we came up with. this one is actually not a depends. It is either one or three servers. Okay, anybody want to know the reason why? Does anybody question the reason why? Does anybody care? That could be the answer. So basically what it is, it comes down to the way that Workflow Manager has implemented using the service bus. So essentially what it does is that if you've got three servers, it can form a quorum. So it can actually do a failover. So although you can go with like two or four servers that may appear to work, you're actually not in a high availability state. So if one of the nodes go down, you won't actually fail over. So it's the way it is. Get over it. So it's either one or three. So the question for Victor is, where should these actually be hosted? Do you put them on your SharePoint farm, or do you put them out on a separate farm?
One of the diagrams, I believe, you did have them co-hosted with the front-end server.
Yep. Yeah, so on which
This is an inter-advanced question.
Yeah, it is.
If you're very workflow heavy, you should have it on its own servers. But if you're just using workflow very sparse, then you could share it with SharePoint.
So three is the form of quorum, doesn't that mean that it also have five?
In theory, talking to the product team about this, they went, in theory it should work, but we've never tested it.
So
okay.
No.
So
too cheap to set up two extra servers.
Well, what actually really scares me about this is that Workflow Manager is actually Azure Workflow, which they took from the Azure services, so it's actually the same product. So that kind of makes me wonder, is your workflow running on three servers? It's the interesting thought about that. Okay.
It's a question regarding this one. In that case, if we have a three workflow server or one, and if you want to create a more DL type of situation, how do you create it? Like if we have three workflow server in one side, one data center, does it mean we'll have another three in other side? Or
we are actually using two of them.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so the whole DR story around Workflow Manager is complicated, to say the least. Yeah, so Neil actually spends ages going through that.
So don't go to DR.
I didn't know this session.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we used to go through that. Yeah.
Now, what I told you about this morning when we swing in between these two farms, we actually have Workflow and we swing in between. We have a couple of PowerShell scripts that does it for us. So, but it's was a bit threshold getting over it and understanding how to do a proper DR on that one. But it actually works really smooth.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the one thing in terms of your question about one server or three servers from a DR perspective, it depends how quickly you want to recover your environment. If you're prepared to run with one in DR and run defensive, effectively run almost degraded, if you like, but functional, your DR scenario for the service bus and for workflow is your SQL DBs. That's your your fault domain, if you like. So as long as if you replicate those, mirror or log ship those DBs to the DR site, you can recreate the workflow farm using one server, scripted, very quick, and then connect SharePoint to it. So you don't have to have three servers sat there just in case you need to fail over.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, it's a good point.
Can we use, I can ask you a question too, right? Can we use always-on technology in SQL for
Absolutely.
Some of
Yes, you can. Yeah. So if it's in a different data center, it'll be asynchronous commit.
Yeah. The limitation with asynchronous replication and always-on is we only support content DBs right now. So service application DBs, we're not currently supported to use always-on asynchronous.
Yep. So hurry up and get off your butt and test it, Neil.
Oh, my job.
So here's a question for Victor, since he loves Office Web Apps.
I know the answer to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go. Not you. It should be in the same domain. It's the best option. It can be in the same form, but it's preferred in the same domain as the majority of your users. If you have a multi-domain scenario, focus on where the majority, just like SharePoint. And it must be in a domain as a requirement if you have more than one server. You should have more than one server. Yeah.
You said you support always on available groups for content in asynchronous mode. If you had another always on availability group for configuration, could that be in synchronous mode?
Yes.
So synchronous mode is fine for low latency networks for high availability.
Right. So what would you class as low latency? 26
milliseconds? So if you're in synchronous mode, you do need to meet that 1 millisecond network latency.
You have to meet the 1 millisecond.
Yep, correct. Right. You have to be in the same logical data center as well. So otherwise you get into that, that horrible stretch farm type scenario as well.
And just to add to that real quickly, just from a database perspective, we've had ASB Bank having synchronous replication between Albany and Sydney, which is about 25k. And their users notice, even when you when you get to three or four milliseconds, you had a lot of conversations and work with DBAs there, and users start to notice.
Yeah.
Applications notice 3 or 4 milliseconds in
sync. Since it's basically mirroring, the commit is on the other side, so that will be for every transaction, at latency.
So I'm just conscious that we're running out of time, so let's just quickly kind of skip through these because what I think we need to get to, the summary, and we know what's next.
We still have one prize here.
I do. So you guys can choose, but I've been giving out the prizes, as you can think, and we've also got one more T-shirt left as well.
That's a lot of responsibility, mate.
So...
Question. Why all the SharePoint
seminars
aren't there? Because they're
just
so
up.
I know.
Very
cripple
friendly over there.
I know. Good question. Don't have an answer for it. Apart from the fact that I think for the last 4 years we've been across the road for some bizarre reason. So.
Well, the developers came back over this year, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I know.
I
still don't have what, sorry?
I spent 8 sessions in a ballroom.
Oh, and you still don't have a dance. Okay.
You got a good dancing time.
There you go. That's for you.
it's at least it's some criteria, right? Otherwise,
okay.
It's a bit tough.
So
we've figured it out.
Okay.
Shall I go with it? So I think the question that we really didn't answer, and you may have your own perspective, but the question we really didn't answer was the question relating to the performance point colour support. So the gentleman in the...
Damon.
Damon over there.
Okay.
Hopefully he's got kids, right?
What? So anyway, let's go to the Geek Fest. Hopefully that was a bit of interest for you, a little bit left field. So two more sessions tomorrow. Yeah.